For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
This is WTIC's Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel and Dennis Halnan of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and Dennis by phone at 860-522-9842 or email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com. Get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here are Eric and Dennis on WTIC News Talk 1080.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric on this snowy Saturday morning. Dennis is enjoying some time off. And this is our first show of our 30th year on WTIC as a public service of Tab Computer Systems. And we appreciate you guys for listening to us for that long. We don't know what you're thinking, but we appreciate it anyways. We're very happy to be here. And we thank 1080 and 1080 Management for supporting us as well and offering the program to you. So we are here to help you out. And speaking of that, I am lucky enough to have on the program Kennedy Smith. And good morning, Kennedy. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Kennedy is a senior researcher of the Institute of Local Self-Reliance. And you guys did a study that just kind of blew me away. Not surprising, though, about how Amazon may not be offering office supplies as cheaply as we'd hoped to our public school systems.
Yeah, we did a similar study with a smaller number of communities in our database in 2016, looking at the spending habits of local governments and school districts that year. And we asked them then through public records requests to tell us how much they had spent with Amazon. We repeated that for 2023 data and released the report last month looking at it. And it was, as you say, it really kind of blows you away to see how much of this very substantial amount of money is going to Amazon now instead of going to local and regional office supply businesses, and not just office supply businesses, businesses that supply all kinds of things to local governments and school districts, like, you know, sports equipment and medications and communications equipment, computer equipment, everything in that category.
You're right. I mean, so much is going that direction. Everyone thinks it's easy. Just go on Amazon and buy, you know, whatever it might be. The thing that really blew me away, and I think this was part of your study, was I think it was Oregon that you talked about, where they were spending $500,000 more than they would if they just went to a regular office supply house and got their supplies because of Amazon's pricing is variable. It's like a box of pens cost $8 today, but it costs $18 tomorrow.
Yeah, we found that across the country for the current study, we got data from 128 different places, 58 cities, 26 counties, three consolidated city county governments, and 41 school districts.
Wow.
We also got some data from state agencies, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
And we found consistently that these places were spending more than they would if they had gone to local suppliers, that the prices were fluctuating wildly, and that, you know, it was really having an impact on the local economy. A couple of examples. We found that overall local governments spent four times as much with Amazon in 2023 as they had in 2016. And that's adjusted for inflation. That's just an enormous impact in a few years. And we think that, you know, the pandemic probably had an impact on that because when people suddenly weren't in their offices, you know, their employers were telling them, you know, get supplies wherever you can.
Yeah.
But it hasn't returned back to a normal spending level. We found that the city of Boulder, for example, paid $8.99 for a 12-pack of Sharpies.
Mm-hmm.
But Denver Public Schools, just, you know, down the road, paid $28.63 for the same product on the same day.
Wow.
Those kinds of fluctuations showed up throughout our data and really speaks to how dynamic pricing is anathema to what sound public purchasing and procurement is supposed to be, which is guaranteed prices that a local government or a school district can use for reliable budgeting.
Well, they're not, from what I would guess, is they're not actually going out and getting contracts for office supplies like they might have in the past, where they would say, hey, we're going to supply you with office supplies and here's the price we expect. Now they're just saying, you know, go ahead on Amazon and buy it. And that lack of oversight, that lack of a contract, that lack of buying local within your community just produces this wild waste. That's a kind of what we're talking about here is this, you know, go ahead and buy it wherever you want. And yes, during the pandemic, they shut down all the local small businesses, let the big boxes stores run, right? You know, it's kind of made absolute no sense as far as the rhyme or reason. You know, you could walk into a Staples and buy what you need, but you couldn't go into Bob's office supplies because why? You know, rhyme or reason went out the door, and now you've got these scenarios where school systems are getting ripped off. So now you guys, the Institute for Self-Reliance here, local self-reliance, do you guys talk to governments and politicians or whoever to try to get folks more up to speed on how we're getting ripped off so policies can change?
Oh, absolutely. We look at places that have done a better job at managing their spend. We look at policies that they can put in place that will help them control their spend and provide as much hands-on assistance as we can to places that are really looking for help. And that's the whole reason for this report, really, is to sort of wake up school districts, local school boards, and local governments to say, look at what's happening. You know, Amazon says, you know, in all of its marketing material that our dynamic pricing means that you're guaranteed that you're always going to get the lowest price.
But is that what they say?
That's not true, because that's what they say. Hmm. The dynamic pricing means you're always going to get the lowest price. But, you know, we found that the highest prices paid for the most frequently purchased supplies in those communities that we surveyed were on average 136% higher than the lowest prices paid. So massive fluctuations in prices. The city of Denver, we found that if they had consistently received Amazon's lowest prices, it would have saved at least 17% on routine supplies in 2023. That equals $1 million that the city essentially lost that it could have used for schools, or it could have used for recreation or parks or, you know, essential services.
Right. I mean, $1 million. I mean, we look at budgets happening all over Connecticut, and increases are massive all over Connecticut, 5, 6, 7, 8% increases. And if folks are doing what they're doing just in these instances, just for office supplies and not looking local, what else are they doing with our money? It's clearly they're not paying attention. I did not know Amazon marketed dynamic pricing as the lowest price, because when I go and look at an Amazon price, you can go in and out. And like I talked about it before you got on the air, I use baking soda to manage my pool. It's really the only chemical I need besides chlorine. And $15 one day, $30 the next. Right? It's
yeah.
Crazy. We as consumers in general, I think, are finding that we're not getting the best prices.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw this in the news just last week, but a federal district court judge in Seattle has ruled that a class action lawsuit against Amazon can go forward for price gouging during the pandemic. And the examples that they were citing in that class action lawsuit are things like Amazon's pricing going up 1,900% for toilet paper, going up 223% for Advil during the pandemic, because they knew that they could get away with it.
Well, let's see what happens with that. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, now what about currently, though? Is there anything going on with the fact that this is happening now? Have you gone to any state attorney general and brought your study to them? I know it's not sexy, and these guys like to talk about how they're going to save us money and fight for us, but this, you know, we're going to start fighting Amazon over office supplies just doesn't sound sexy enough for them. But $1 million in a school system is not chump change. Are you reaching out to these folks? Are they reaching out to you, or what's going on? Because this has got to stop.
Yeah, we are definitely hearing from communities out there that are concerned about this. And there are some great examples of communities that are pushing back and are doing a better job. There, Tempe, Arizona, for example, a local bookstore owner, a woman named Gail Shanks, who owns a or co-owns a bookstore called Changing Hands, which is a, you know, a big employer out there. They have like 100 employees, but mm-hmm. with stores in Tempe and Phoenix. She basically brought the issue to her city council and said, look, you guys are spending, you know, close to $500,000 a year with Amazon. And many of the things you're buying are books and office supplies and sporting goods, things that we have businesses for right here in this area.
Right.
And the city kind of woke up and said, oh, you're right. I don't know why that's happening. We've never kind of, you know, bounced back from the pandemic pattern that we established. Mm-hmm. And so they have now cut their spending with Amazon by 84%. And continue to take a look at that. Richmond, Virginia, is a great example of another thing that's kind of happening as a result of these spending, sort of overspending, is that the city, when they dig into what people are buying, they're finding lots of instances of fraud. One of the things that we noticed in our data was that people were buying not just office supplies, but they were buying, you know, clothing and makeup and candy. And we found one guy in Virginia at a public university who spent $900 on pretty hardcore sex toys. That's not something that you would buy from an office supply dealer, you know, before this all happened. But because you can buy so many things on Amazon, that unless local governments and school districts have really tight controls on this, people are going to buy whatever they want, whatever Amazon has, and they'll just put it on their purchasing card and hope that nobody detects what they're buying.
Well, that's awful.
It is awful. It's terrible. I mean, so it's not just that, you know, local governments and school districts are overspending because of Amazon's dynamic pricing, but also because of Amazon's, you know, incredible inventory of stuff that it sells. And the sort of tendency to not really monitor that very, very closely. So, you know, it's really important that local governments and school districts put spending blocks on what they're buying, that they honor existing contracts with established suppliers. I was talking about Richmond and I kind of got off course there, but they now require staff to start with existing negotiating purchasing contracts and to buy from Amazon only when someone isn't providing that locally in their established contracts. And that cut their spending dramatically. And they're getting better service. You know, Amazon always advertises, oh, we can get it to you in a day or two, usually a day in urban areas, two or more days in rural areas. Mm-hmm. But these regional office supply dealers who don't usually have, like, storefronts, they kind of operate from warehouses in industrial parks and they do deliveries.
Yeah.
They'll deliver to you in the same day and not just deliver it to a loading dock, but they will take, you know, copy paper and deliver it to every desk, every copy machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different level of service and it's free.
Right.
To get Amazon's free shipping with this Amazon business category, as Amazon business for government is what Amazon calls it. A local government or school district has to pay close to $3,500 a year for a Prime membership to get this free
goodness.
Shipping.
So we're paying a membership to do that.
Yep. It just keeps kind of adding and adding and adding up.
So even in our business at Tab, you know, I started back in the early 90s, and this is when mail order computers were a thing, right? Remember, you know, Dell, Gateway, all these guys. And of course, here in Connecticut, you know, we're sitting as a local small business, and guess what? We have to charge our customers when we build a computer, 6% sales tax. Does the mail order?
Right.
Nope. So for some reason, we were competing with mail order outside of the state on our sales tax because, of course, takes our legislatures forever to figure out that, you know, you're crushing the local guys with the taxes. People are going to save 6% by default by not buying it from the local guy. Can we take a break, Kenny, and kind of get back to you and talk about what you guys do as the Institute for Local Self-Reliance? Because I want to find, you guys have been around since the 70s, right?
We had our 50th anniversary last year.
All right. So, Kennedy, hang on for a sec more, and we want to talk more about how Amazon is probably not saving you any money if you're in the public sector, and what Kennedy's group can do and what they have been doing for the past 50 years. Hang on 1 second. We'll be right back.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
All All right, we are back, and I'm with Kennedy Smith. She's a senior researcher for the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and that institute has been around for 50 years. So, Kennedy, give us a little background about what the institute is. I've never heard of it until this story, so I apologize. What do you guys do?
Sure. So, you know, we recognize, it's not like it's a belief of ours, it's a fact, that when you have many small competitors in the market, you have greater innovation and you have better price control than if you have one or two big companies that are dominating the market in almost any category. This Amazon study is an example of that, you know, that Amazon can charge more and they do have more control because of their size. They just dominate the market. And we look at that impact of corporate concentration in many different industries. I'm on the independent business team there where we're looking specifically at things that affect independent businesses. But we also have a team that looks at broadband, internet access. We have a team that looks at energy democracy. So we look at different sectors and how corporate concentration is affecting them.
So now both of those other options, other items there, internet competitiveness and energy is another big issue here in Connecticut. We finally allowed a third party access to the municipal gain area of our 40-foot pieces of wood in the ground so that we could actually have some competition on internet here. So we now are finally seeing internet prices go down because, you know, understanding how the internet works was not a thing that Connecticut could do. Energy is even worse. Here in Connecticut, our energy is almost as expensive as Hawaii. So we don't know how energy works here in Connecticut. So you guys are able to help educate our legislator as to understanding how competition and other modes of energy might allow for lower costs. I mean, what would you do?
Those are the kinds of things that we do. And you know, we're finding lots of states right now that where their states' attorneys general or their governors are really looking at this carefully. Rhode Island has just been working on some legislation, for example, that would prohibit large grocery store chains. Stop and Shop was the big offender that they found there, from putting protective restrictive covenants on the deeds for their buildings so that if they decide to relocate, another competitor can't locate in that building. And so you have towns that have food deserts because the property that would be the logical building for a grocery store is tied up. So they're introducing legislation to control things like that. Lots of states are beginning to pay attention to this and move on it. I think it may be a little bit easier to focus on at the state level and the local level for sure than it may be at the federal level. There's one other thing I wanted to mention when you talked about your business being a local business. Mm-hmm. One of the things that Amazon has been telling school districts and local governments is that, you know, you can still buy from your local independent businesses. You just have to get them to join our platform as a third-party seller, and then you can go ahead and buy from them. But what they don't tell you is that their third-party vendor fees are so expensive, like, you know, 50% of what the gross sales are, that vendors have to raise their prices in order to make any profit, and that raises prices for everybody.
Yeah, that's pretty gross to go to the dark side like that. We would avoid that ourselves for those reasons. It's just ridiculous. But, you know, we're all battling all these big boxes. There's convenience in it, but not necessarily price savings. And that's where we have to figure out how to compete on the convenience. And the problem is the technology for folks like us, small businesses, to compete on those marketplaces that Amazon has developed on their websites to make these orders so simple is part of the issue, right? The technology that's out there for folks to build marketplaces on their websites, to place their products there, it is daunting. And that's another issue in that if you don't adapt, you're going to get crushed by these guys, even though their prices are much higher.
It's very true. When I think about just like, you know, sort of normal small retail businesses, the kind of software sophistication they have to be able to have an integrated inventory management system so that if somebody buys something online, it ticks down the inventory for their in-store sales is really, you know, beyond the reach of many small businesses yet. So there's some work to be done too in programming that local governments can do and state governments can do to help make that easier for small businesses. And there are other platforms out there that are doing this well. There's a company in that's based in California called Glass Commerce, and they basically are what Amazon is. It's like a platform where anybody can sell stuff. but their prices, like Amazon might charge 50% of its gross sales mm-hmm. to independent businesses. Glass Commerce charges 6 or 8%.
Much better.
And that includes everything. You know, it's much better because they're not as profit motivated. They are motivated towards helping small businesses succeed. And so there are more and more local governments and school districts that are signing on with Glass Commerce instead of with Amazon. And that way they get a platform. Their local businesses can compete there
yep.
and everybody wins.
Sounds good, Kennedy. Thank you for joining us on this program this morning. We really appreciate your input.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you soon. Kennedy Smith. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. That was very interesting with Kennedy Smith. We'll put a link up there for you for the Institute of Local Self-Reliance, and you can read more of Kennedy's work. And we'll stay in touch with her, too, because that definitely sounds like this is going to be an issue that we all need to pay attention to. And hopefully somebody in the local school boards is paying attention to how they're buying their stuff, because you guys are paying more than you should using Amazon, from what we can tell. Let's go on to your calls, though. We're going to go to Lou in Simsbury next. What's happening, Lou?
So I have a question related to HP printers.
Yeah.
I am at home. I have a Macintosh. My wife has a Windows machine. And at my secondary undisclosed location, I operate on my parents' printer. So at home, we have a HP 6950.
Yeah.
At the undisclosed location, we have a HP 9120. On the 6950, I use Smart Ink cartridges. And on mm-hmm. the packaging, they kind of allude to don't ever update your drivers.
What?
That's what they say on the packaging. And I'm guessing they say that because if you update your drivers, then the printer stops working because they're not genuine HP.
Oh, yes.
Cartridges.
Gotcha. That would be the reason. Yep.
All right. So on the 6950, the one I use at home, I cannot stop this thing from printing on both sides of the page.
Duplexing?
Right.
It's a choice. So you got to tell it not to do that.
Well, I tell it not to do that, and still does it. the answer probably is driver update.
Well, yeah, especially if you've told it not to, and it still does it, there's something wrong. Yep, I agree. When you're doing a print preview, and you're going down the items, you know, black and white, color, collate,
right.
There's
a switch.
All right.
There's a switch that says duplex, and now on my Mac, I always switch it off, and there's an option to save it as the default. So my typical default is black and white draft, no duplex. That's my default.
Right.
It keeps coming back to it, even though that's the default, it keeps duplexing. So mm-hmm. what I'm doing now is just printing one page at a time,
right.
which is, you know, a pain in the neck.
Right. Well, have you checked to see if the control panel on the actual printer itself doesn't have a default setting? Sometimes we configure it in the software, right, which would be the drivers. Sometimes you can configure it on the printer itself. Like for whatever reason, you can maybe possibly configure this printer to be set into duplex mode on the box itself, the printer, so that it would override whatever you tell it on the software. Does that make sense? Have you checked that?
Makes sense.
Check that. Yeah.
Okay. Now, on the 9120,
mm-hmm.
which happens to be a really nice printer, I can flip back and forth. So in my own diagnostics, I'm saying, well, maybe it's my machine,
yeah,
the Mac, that's not picking up the HP printing protocols or whatever. But I can switch back and forth on that printer.
Right.
So I'm pretty confident that it's not my Mac.
I agree. It's the driver, or it's a default setting physically on the actual printer itself for the other one.
Okay. All right. So let's just say for the purposes of discussion,
mm-hmm.
if it is not on the printer.
Yep.
So that would lead us to driver update.
Yep.
And Smart Ink says don't do the driver update.
Right. You're going to have to bite the bullet and buy HP Ink eventually.
Great.
I mean, it might work. I mean, the driver update warning there. See, it's not doing you any favors, but yeah, you might be forced to buy the HP Ink, unfortunately.
Okay. Sorry. All right. Yeah. You know, it is what it is. Thank you for your, thank you for the advice.
Sure.
I'm just wondering how bad I'm going to screw up my life when I pull the trigger.
Exactly. I know. I feel it. So just trust me. I feel the same way. I'm a user like anybody else. Right. And I'm the same victim. I'm like, do I want to print out each page by itself? Cause that works and use the cheap ink, or do I want to get it to work automatically? I feel your pain, Lou.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your time. Great interview with that lady before.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's an important topic.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
You got it.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. So Lou's going to decide update the software or pay for expensive ink. Let's go to Antoinette in Fairfield. What's going on, Antoinette?
Hello again. It's me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I have an issue with updating my Apple, not the Apple, the PC. It keeps coming up, but I keep getting a window it can never complete, and it keeps coming up that updates is available. I go to fix, but it never can fix, so I have to turn off. This has been happening for a couple of months, so I'm never able to update on the Apple. It keeps telling me
Apple or PC?
No, the PC.
Okay.
The PC. Yeah. Let me go to pictures because I
is it Windows 11?
Let me do a print screen of it, and it keeps saying what needs your attention, and it's something that says Western Digital, N as in Nancy, V as in Victor, Me Disc. It keeps coming up with that, and I can't get past that. And when I go to refresh, nothing happens. So I just, you know, click it out and continue to use the computer. But I'm never able to do a Windows update.
Yeah, so Western Digital N?
N is NVMe, M-E, disk. It says that your PC has hardware that isn't ready for this version of Windows.
Yep, yeah, there it is. So it's trying to update to probably Windows 11. From Windows 10.
I already have 11.
You do?
Yes, 11 is on here when it came. And when I took a print screen of Windows update, it says Windows 11 version 25H2.
Yeah, yeah.
Install error.
Yep, unbelievable. So this is a morning of firmware. So I know you have your son there that pushed that Apple on you. This is going to be a firmware update you need to do on your Western Digital hard drive, which makes me nervous for you.
Oh, okay.
So what has to happen is you have to do a firmware update on that Western Digital drive to fix this compatibility issue that wasn't a compatibility issue when you went to Windows 11 earlier, but became one later. So you can thank Microsoft. The question is, do you want to bother with it or not? I would tell you that you're going to have, I mean, if you're willing to tackle it, we can try to find the link to doing the Western Digital firmware update on that particular model. But it's going to be a bunch of steps. And frankly, I don't think I've ever done a firmware update on a hard drive that I can remember myself.
Okay. Yeah, keep saying, even going back to June, I just took a, print screen of it, cumulative update previews, Windows 11, 23,
H2.
Yeah. Learn more, but when I go to learn more, it says not, they can't see anything problem, but I can't do, I mean, I'm still able to use the computer.
Yeah, you just can't do the update.
I can't do the update.
Yeah. And we can put some links here as far as what is going on and what you may have to try.
Okay.
But there is an updated firmware option here for that solid state drive, which I just
okay. If so that's a firmware. Okay,
it's a firmware, but make sure you back it up, Antoinette.
Okay. Oh yeah, backup. Okay. Oh, I have backups.
Good.
I back up three times. Now, one thing is, there's a two particular websites that I stream on the PC. It doesn't happen on my laptop, which is Apple, because I have them both on at the same time so I can go around the room with the laptop.
Yeah.
But it's on the PC, it's always stopping and saying, oh, I get the or snap, and I have to reboot for that particular. But it's only these two particular websites when I'm streaming live.
Gotcha. You get an aw snap warning. I don't know
only
about you.
Only on the PC, and I'm in the Brave browser.
Are you hip enough to actually care that use an aw snap? I don't know. I'm not hip enough.
No. Right.
Aw snap.
And the lady who just spoke.
Yeah.
I have a two direct experience. One with a website where we sew is one of my talents. Some point posted a deal on a sewing machine. I said, oh, snap. That's a good.
Maybe you are hip enough.
That's a good price for a backup. You always have to have a backup because I have an industrial. So
yeah.
I went to the website. Amazon gave me a different price.
Yeah.
I went immediately back. When I went back to post, what are you talking about? That's not the price. There was a whole slew of other members of this particular website. We were all quoting different prices.
It's the old bait and switch.
From different parts of the country.
Yeah, bait and switch, Antoinette. It's definitely happening a lot, and those private sellers are just as guilty of it. Because based on what Kennedy mentioned, they have to pay 50% of their profits. So they're going to bait and switch you into getting there. And that's just nasty. On your OSNAP.
And I recommend to everybody to always go to the website if you can, because I did that for a handrail, for a foldable handrail domestic.
Mm-hmm.
And when Amazon had it for $89. This was a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to the Samsung website, they had it for $19.99.
Wow.
With free shipping.
Wow, that's a big difference. On your OSNAP issue with the Brave browser, try a different browser to see if you have a better luck. I can tell you right now, the Brave browser blocks a lot of commercials. It's going to block a lot of ads.
I'm noticing that more often with websites I go to.
Yeah.
I'm getting a warning that it may not be, safe. But when I go to the same website, monitor mirror to mirror and do it on the Apple,
mm-hmm.
I don't get that warning in the browser, the Brave browser, only on the PC.
Right. I think the Brave browser is actually blocking the ads, which is the OSNAP problem, I think, on your streaming, because they want to sell you stuff.
Oh, okay.
So try a Chrome browser to see if you get the OSNAP, and I bet you don't. But you can use the Brave for other things, but if it's ad sponsored or it's ad supported, Brave will block a lot.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
All right,
you guys are great.
Thank you.
Okay,
good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah,
bye-bye. Doing a firmware on a hard drive. That scares me a little bit. We're going to step out for a quick break. Laura and Marla will be back with your calls after this.
Some crimes are so shocking, they don't just make headlines. They forever change our society. I'm Katie Ring, host of America's Most Infamous Crimes. Each week, I take on one of the most notorious criminal cases. Each case unfolds across multiple episodes, released every Tuesday through Thursday, from the first sign that something was wrong to the moment the truth came out or didn't. Listen to and follow America's Most Infamous Crimes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
All right, we are back in the final stretch here of our first show of our 30th year on WTIC News Talk 1080, and we wouldn't be here without you guys. So eventually, occasionally, we should say, the lines have had no calls, and clearly we're like, okay, all the computer problems in Connecticut have been solved, but it doesn't last long. Let's go to your calls. Laura in Cheshire next. What's happening, Laura?
Yes, good morning. And first of all, congrats on your 30th anniversary. That's great.
29th, working on our 30th year,
well,
but thank you.
You're getting there. You're getting there.
Yeah, we appreciate it, Laura.
My question is about the truncation that is happening with audio download files. Here's the scenario. A friend and I both have iPads. We both have iOS 26 installed. We both are amateur musicians, and we both belong to the same online lesson service. She is unable to download full audio files for part of the lesson. It truncates it after 2 minutes. I, on the other hand, we both have the same iPad, same iOS. I can download the entire 5 minutes or however many minutes the audio file is. Can you think of a reason why hers would be truncated upon download?
Is it even listenable, or is it like, let's say it's 5 minutes, do you even get 30 seconds of actual sound?
She gets the full 2 minutes, but after the 2 minutes, it cuts out. I get the full 5 minutes, and I can hear all of it, as can she, of her 2 minutes.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. I've searched around the internet. It seemed like there were some potential issues with iOS 26, they said, but I was able to do it, and I have iOS 26, so
yeah.
It can't be that.
Right, and it's always the case, or is it sometimes?
It became the case fairly recently, she said. Now, I'm fine. She's not fine, so it's not really my problem. I'm just trying to help her out.
Yeah, I'm looking too.
Yeah, would there be something on the iPad that you would know of itself that would prevent the complete download? Because that's what I'm suspecting, given that we basically have the same exact setup.
Space? Like she doesn't have the space to take the actual download? I mean, that's where you start going with the most basic of things, because when all else is equal, the same version, the same software, just downloading, the function of downloading is not a thing. And I can't imagine the iOS device saying, oh, I only want 2 minutes of this. I don't even know it's smart enough to even do that, other than the space available for the download. She might be out of space, and it stops at that point because of the space issue. But that's where I go. And then even the searching I'm doing here shows nothing really out there.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll have her double check. I think she's got plenty of space, but I can double check. I mean, because she's way better musician than I'll ever be. She has downloaded a lot more files than me, so it's possible it's a space issue. I will double check with her.
When it comes to the logic I've ever found that seems to serve me, is you guys always got to go to the basics first. And there's nothing else that's different. There's absolutely no reason somebody's going to actually do this. The app you're downloading might be the problem. Now, is she using the exact same app to download the files?
Yes.
So we've already covered that. So you get the iOS the same, the app's the same. Foreground large downloads. It talks about trimming your files, but obviously that's the issue. You're getting it from the source audio file trunk order. There's a 2021.
Okay. Because I thought I had read some little thing, I don't know if it was correct, that iOS was limiting downloading of certain types of files, which, okay, I thought that might be it, but when I did it, it worked. So that doesn't seem right to me.
It doesn't to me either. Why would they do that? I mean, limiting it would be either all or nothing, not a sort of download. So to me, it feels like a space issue, or it's some sort of internet communication issue where she's dropping the communication, the file doesn't finish. It just drops, and something's maybe kicking on the background, interrupting the download. Now, there is a great Apple forum that Carmen Filaramo, if you remember Carmen, he's our digital camera expert, but he's part of a Apple group down in the free state of Florida down there, and he might be able to have them answer that specifically as an iPad user. You may want to put a post over at the Computer Talk with Tab Listener Network, and Carmen might chime in on that for this particular issue. But I think it's space or something that's causing the app to be told to stop the download. Is she watching the download, or is she putting it down, walking away? Any error that pops up?
It should be pretty fast with the internet speed. I mean, these are only like literally 5 minute audio files.
Yeah,
they're not massive either, you know.
That's true too. So the space thought is maybe not a good one either. But why it would only do it for a few minutes? That just seems bizarre. Nothing I can see on doing some quick searches really pops out at me as the cause. I'm sure you did some of these searches yourself too.
I did some of this stuff. I really didn't understand, to be honest with you. It was talking about something with limiting. From certain websites, it was limiting downloading. But again, if it's working for me, that's why I did the comparison. So it can't really be that.
Right. And she probably doesn't have any kind of additional security products running to actually cause it to say, oh, I don't trust this file, and only allow it to come down partially and still actually work. The fact that it actually works is kind of weird to me, because a partial file, it would seem to me it would be damaged and unlistenable. So Are we sure it's not the whole file? Like, have you guys compared the actual size of the files?
Yeah, I mean, mine is definitely bigger in terms of, you know, megabytes.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. See if you can post on Computer Talk with Tab Listener Network if you're part of that. And I know Carmen, he's listening, and they have a whole Apple Mac group down there that might have an idea for you.
Okay. That's a good alternative. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Laura. Let me know what happens.
Okay. Will do. Thank you.
Yep, bye. You got it. Bye. No answer on that one. That's a funky one. Let's go to Marla in Torrington next. What's going on, Marla?
Good morning. I love your show. You've been so helpful to me, and I'm continuing on my Save Money campaign.
All right.
Today, I wanted to ask you about phones. I have a phone service that charges at least double of what a lot of the lower-cost ones are charging.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you know anything about the Optimum phone service.
So cable companies are all pushing these lines, and I haven't tried them yet, but most likely they're just using other carriers to offer cell service, and they want to make you sticky, right? So if you've got your cable service through your cell service through your cable now you're more likely to not punt the cable service for a low cost fiber service, right? That's why they're trying to hook you.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
And it's quote unquote free, right?
No, it was like $16 and added to the $45 for my internet only, made it pretty reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have a question. If the cable goes out, does the phone service go out?
Fair question. The answer would be no. The cell service going to run on a cellular network. So what they're doing is they're buying bandwidth on, I don't know who they're using. They could be using AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile.
Yeah.
They're paying that carrier a lower price to offer folks this access. They're paying them to do that. So if your cable goes out, your cell service should still work. It's purely designed to make them more sticky so that if a low-cost internet comes in like GoNetSpeed to Torrington and they say, oh, I can do that internet speed for $35, right? You're not going to switch because you're going to lose the cell service. But no, if you feel that's a good deal, at $16 is it unlimited data or is it a limited amount of data?
I believe it's unlimited. And actually, well, just to try and get my internet lower, I did accept the service. I did not switch to it, but I accepted it because together it was still cheaper than what I had been paying for internet alone elsewhere. Long story short is if I want to be independent on which phone carrier I use, like to switch to Consumer Cellular or one of the others, what on my phone do I need to save myself so I don't lose it, i.e. voice memos or voicemail, the notes area, if you know which things I'd need to save on my on my phone itself.
So your voicemail is carrier driven, I'm pretty certain. So if you're with AT&T, let's say, your voicemails are with them. So when you move to a different carrier, you're going to probably lose those voicemails unless you have a way to export them physically down to your phone, which I wouldn't necessarily bother doing unless you have some sort of voicemail from a lost loved one where you want to replay that voice. Yeah. So you'd have to try to figure out how to download that voicemail. You should do that now because there's no guarantee that they would keep that voicemail anyways. They could they could just get rid of that based on its age. So if you do have a voicemail, try to download it. You may have to talk to the carrier about how to do it. That way you're independent again of the carrier. As far as other things, if you're an Android user, most likely you're connected to a Google account, right?
I have iPhone.
Oh.
And actually my carrier right now is Verizon.
Okay.
Charging me like $65 for one phone line.
Wow.
Exactly.
I agree, making a change. So talk to them about getting that voicemail down to a physical file. iPhone, you're going to have that backed up in the iCloud. So any pictures or what have you would be protected by that backup. So that should cover that. So once you port the number over to the new carrier, it's just the numbers with them, and then voicemails would be handled by them. in the same way they were handled by Verizon. So that's all you should really have to do. But I would tell you to get that file backed up so they could delete it any time if they want to.
True. All right. Well, thank you very, very much. Congratulations on your 30 years.
Thank you.
And I just want to tell you, you guys are phenomenal. You've helped me so much, and I know that you've helped so many other people. So thank you for your show.
It's our pleasure, and thank you for listening, Marla.
Take care.
All right. You too. All right, guys, I want to thank you all for joining me on this Saturday, snowy Saturday morning. I want to thank Kim Smith from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. I want to thank Carolyn for producing and Mike G for posting everything live. We will see you next Saturday.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.